Hello, this is Property Matters, a weekly catch-up on the world of property supported by Fairview International Property Consultancy and auctionproperty.co.uk. We're live every Sunday, 10 a.m, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and our website, propertymatterstv.co.uk. If you're watching on our website, please leave us that Google review, and if you're watching via social media, get involved in the conversation in the comments section. The email address, if you want to send us a topic to talk about, it's hello@propertymatterstv.co.uk. If you don't have time to watch us on the Sunday show, you can get us on the move with a podcast from the platforms on the other side of the screen, and we're live on Dealsay Radio every week as well. So let's take a look at the week's news with our property expert, Joe Joshi. Hi, Joe.
Yes, good morning, Paul. Good morning to all our viewers and listeners, wherever you are. The property world never changes. And even though it's a long bank holiday weekend, we're still here to make sure that we deliver what we can.
So our first story, Joe, as it's the turn of the month, means that we're looking at the Zoopla UK House Price Index for April 2024. And the headlines are that annual price inflation is down 0.2%. Prices have dropped by 0.2%, unchanged from February. Prices broadly static, but sales volumes are up 12% on the year. 64% of homes are in markets with price falls, which is down from 82% in October of last year. Higher mortgage rates continue to impact buying power. Annual mortgage costs for buyers are up 61%, higher than 3 years ago. Two-thirds down to the higher rates and one-third is due to the higher prices. Buyers in the south face greater impact, compounded by stamp duty and other costs, which will keep price inflation in check. And price inflation is split between the south and the rest of the UK, and that's going to continue. The market is on track for 1.1 million sales in 2024, which is up 10% on last year. So the market continues to adjust to higher mortgage rates, sales volumes are rising, and house prices are flat. What the market really needs, I guess, Joe, is continued price stability, which will create an environment for continued growth of sales. That's the view of Zoopla. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Zoopla have obviously done all the research to get it to that stage, but the real facts are that make all the difference in this is the mortgage payments, Paul. They are probably the ones that are going to, you know, we haven't really had the full effect. And I think over the next year, 18 months, some of the rates that were lower fixed rates are going to come into normal, and we're probably going to find that that's where the real shock's going to be. I mean, when you think about the increase in mortgage payments for the same amount borrowed from 21-22 to currently, it's eye-watering by comparison to what everything else is. House prices, obviously, yes, they are, you know, a little bit adjusted. There's always going to be an adjustment, and there'll be a continue to be an adjustment. Not forgetting the fact that during the pandemic, house prices rose. I think it's up to about 22-23%. So, you know, when you're looking at a 0.2% drop, it's actually not even a drop in the ocean by comparison. I think the biggest pain, the biggest hurt, is going to be in the pocket, not only because of the mortgage, but also of all the utilities and the cost of that. Even though they're saying that some of those are coming down, they're not coming down as dramatically as they went up in the first place. And it's the same as the mortgage rate, that people are saying, oh, your mortgage rate will come down, but it's never going to come down below 5% if it even shifts from 5.25% in the foreseeable future. So people have got to adjust their pockets. That's the good thing about all of this, I suppose, if there's such a thing as a good thing, and that is that there seems to have been a little bit of stability in the actual activity. So the market hasn't plummeted to such a point that, you know, people would like it to be, especially for the first time buyer. They'd like to see it drop a lot so that they can actually start to pitch in. But as you rightly say, and Zoopla say, in the southeast, it is more painful than it is perhaps in other parts of the country, purely because of the size of the loan and size and value of properties that are being sold. It affects everybody quite heavily, including places like stamp duty and other costs.
When we used to look at this report during the pandemic, and we would see the imbalance between, you know, and the number of people looking to move, but then there wasn't the properties available on the market. They're saying the market is now more balanced than it was before. There are more homes for sale and there's renewed confidence amongst buyers. Mm-hmm. And that continues to support this rise of sales by 12% year on year. I guess really, though, that's not really that impressive a statistic, in the sense that if you look back at last year, what did we have? We had, you know, 14 mortgage rises, which literally it was a mortgage rise every month through the whole of 2023, that means. And therefore, people were panicking, not knowing where it's going. But there is now this relative period of calm around about 4.5%, whereby people feel that things are maybe going to be a bit more calm and they can go forward with confidence.
Yeah, I mean, the stability that the mortgage rate has now began to offer is obviously giving some level of confidence to the new buyers. Fixed rates have been around 4.5%, but I believe that that is probably going to go a bit north again, perhaps closer to 5 than 4.5. But I've, you know, we've chatted on this show a million times about this, and we know that, or at least I know that the figure will always be circa, the new normal circa 5%. I mean, at 5.25, it's a little bit more than we bargained for, and it may be that that's the quarter that they'll use to try and, you know, motivate perhaps the results in the election. But even that is not looking too good at the moment, in terms of, you know, what will be the outcome. And that's also a worry, because the outcome of that is actually going to really slow the whole market down. The uncertainty of what the change may bring over the next 18 months, 2 years, depending on the new incumbent or number 10. And so, you know, there will be a level of uncertainty. The uncertainty has been there for some time for a number of reasons. I mean, the buy-to-let market has pretty much been kicked out of the pitch. People are not really looking at that as much as they'd like to. And the house buying process is slightly slow. It's not as negative. It's just that is where we are. And I think people are just, I suppose, sitting on their hands to a large extent. There have been a lot of new instructions coming on, or instructions that people want to do. And there's a number of reasons for those. One is that they are now out of affordability. So there's a lot of people saying, well, look, I may as well sell my house the best I can, because I might lose a bit more on it, and go out and buy something smaller and a little bit more cost effective, because the rate's now going to be a lot different. I mean, if you show some of the statistics that an average mortgage is now gone up anything up to 2,000, between 2,000 and 4,000, and some of the big ones around £7,000-£8,000 a month, that's a lot of money to find, Paul.
Certainly is. I've just got some stats on the screen here for us now. Buyer demand is up 4% this year so far. The number of sales agreed is up 12%. But here's the thing, the flow of new supply is up 14%. And the stock of homes for sale is up 20%. So that's why we're seeing a better balanced market. And they're saying that we'll see this more in these reports in the next few months, because obviously all the sales that are agreed, they're going through the conveyancing process, which typically for moving in is around 6 months. And so that sort of good news will filter through in the next few months. Just talking about the mortgage approvals, they're back now at levels of pre-pandemic. So you can see on the screen now, we had mortgage approvals steady between 60 and 70,000 thereabouts, right the way through from February of 2014, right up till February of 2020. Then it literally drops off a cliff, doesn't it? Down to less than probably around 15,000 mortgage approvals in February of 2020. And then over the next year, as obviously we had stamp duty holidays and all that sort of thing going on, suddenly it rockets into February of 2021, where we got over 110,000 approvals in that time. And it's come back to where it should be. So things have been steadied, if you like. But you can see from February 20 to February 22 just what a turbulent time we live through in terms of property, just looking at that graph.
Oh yes, look at when you look at that graph, and you can see that sort of downward trajectory on the graph with the mortgage lending. It just shows where the market was going, but it has stabilized pre-pandemic levels, and I think it will continue to do that for the balance of this year. But I think depending on what happens in the general election, we'll start to see which way the curve will start to go. And unfortunately, I don't believe it's going to go upwards at the moment, because that uncertainty always makes people stop and think about what they want to do.
Here's some of the information on the mortgage repayments. On average, £4,300 increase in annual mortgage repayments between 2021 and 2024. Here's the data on the screen. You can see it in the northeast. The mortgage repayments in March 2021 average was £3,750, presumably per year. I guess that is, yes, per annum, yeah. And then that's risen to 6,090 in March of 2024. So the difference there of 2,350 a month. And then in the UK, on average, we've got the figures at the bottom of the screen where you've got annual repayments of a mortgage in March 21 was 7,090. Now it's 11,410. And that's an increase of 61% from an upturn of 4,320. So, I mean, that's that on top of also the utility costs that we suffered last year. That was a big ask of people, wasn't it? Another £4,000 a year.
Huge, huge. It's mega. I mean, where are they going to magic that £4,000? This is what I was saying, that the average increase per household was about £1,200 a month more. And that's including the mortgage amount and the utility costs. So, you know, if you're bringing in X and all of a sudden you've got to add another £1,200, that's a challenge. And that's still going to be the challenge. I mean, some people have got through some of it, some people are behind. And of course, there will be the increase in possession rates. And it's not their fault. It's just one of those scenarios where do you find that money from? And they haven't really thought about it, and that's going to have a reverse and adverse effect, because people will become homeless and there's not enough homes for them to go to. So, you know, I mean, there should be really a kick in from the government by saying that, you know, they will support or hold some of those homes owners that are in difficulty to stay there and do some deal with the lenders. Otherwise, what's going to happen is the lenders are going to continue to go down the possession route, and people will become homeless, only to find that they're having to sell the properties at perhaps lesser than they would have done, lose any equity, and then still rely upon the government to house them. So, you know, I anticipate that being almost the top story over the next year, 18 months.
They say that while underlying household incomes will vary by area, this lower additional cost is one reason that market activity and prices are holding up better in more affordable markets with lower prices. So they're saying that obviously, you know, with if you look at a percentage rise on a cheaper property, the percent that you're paying more is going to be a smaller amount of money, even though it's rising fast, it's actually rising up by less money. And the suggestion being is that household income won't vary that much from north to south, whereas the prices in the properties seem to vary more. So therefore, the south is feeling the pain more than the north. Do you agree with that?
Well, the south is. I mean, the south has always been a leader in every way, and why not be a leader in also the pain? So, you know, it's about the value of the homes that they've got. The higher the value of the homes, the higher the fall and the higher the cost and the borrowing. That's unfortunately, you know, that's what's going to be the case. But certainly in the north and northeast and so forth, where there is a lesser effect and a lesser values, it's still up. But so, you know, I suppose there is a theory. The answer is people should sell up as much as they can and then move to the north. But unfortunately, that north-south divide, it's just not going to go away. I mean, they've been trying to bring that together in the last 40 years that I've been in the business. So I can't see how that's ever going to happen. And no matter how many leveling up ministers you're going to bring in, it's just not going to level up, because the demand for property in the south outweighs the demand for the property, you know, to the north.
And of course, stamp duty rears its ugly head in this situation, because in the south of England, some 75% of annual stamp duty receipts were from properties sold and transacted in the southern area of England, and whilst the region only accounted for 50% of the sales. So 50% of the sales in the south created 75% of the stamp duty revenue, because obviously the prices are way above the stamp duty threshold, whereas up north they're not.
That's right. I mean, up north, quite a lot of them actually don't even qualify for stamp duty. Up to £250,000, there's no stamp duty. Whereas in the south, they're paying all the stamp duty. So south always ends up supporting the north in many, many ways that we can. But they have also the pain of the game. And the pain is that right now they're all having to pay anything between 2,000 and 4,000, or in some cases £5,000 a month more in their mortgages, let alone all the other utility costs. So I can't see why it would change. All I can say is that I think as time goes on, and certainly over the next 18 months, 2 years, we will start to actually get what will be the future norm.
They're saying here that the UK's most affordable region, with an average price of £142,000, is the North East, and that is an area with no areas of annual price falls. No surprise there, I guess, really, on that one. But it's interesting that 33% of home movers are open to buying out of area to find the home that they want. So people are realizing that actually, maybe to get the space and the quality that they want, they're going to have to move to a different area. That's interesting.
Well, it's been a norm, isn't it? It's not really abnormal, because people have got to, especially when there is no vehicle for settling the interest-only mortgages, Paul. I mean, we haven't really sort of looked at that side of it. But as time goes on, not only are the rates coming to an end, but there's a lot of interest-only mortgages that have now come to an end. And people have got to turn around and say, well, I've got to sell my property here and go and buy myself what's left with the balance elsewhere. That's the reality of it, and that's something that will come to haunt the market very soon as well, purely because where else are they going to make those payments from? So that's why some people are selling up and saying, okay, well, I'll move a bit further out so that I can actually own my property outright and not have a mortgage for the balance of our lives. So a lot of choices to be made over the next 18 months, 2 years, I would think.
Moving on to our second story, the Renters Reform Bill comes back yet again, but don't worry, we're not talking about any of the detail going through Parliament. What we are going to talk about is a bit that everyone's kind of forgotten about, and that was the fact that renters will have the right to have a pet in a property. The Renters Reform Bill proposes comprehensive changes, including the abolition of evictions under Section 21, which we know, the introduction of a lifetime deposit system, and notably provisions for tenants to request permission from their landlords to keep pets. While these changes aim to offer more stability and security for tenants, they raise significant questions about the impact on landlords and the management of their properties. The findings of a survey carried out by Statista on behalf of Leaders Romans Group indicate a palpable apprehension ahead of new rules being introduced. The study revealed that 57% of UK households had a pet in 2023. However, it introduces a host of challenges for property maintenance, tenant relationships, and building management. Some 56% of landlords surveyed predicted negative impacts due to the bill's approach to pet ownership in rental properties. In contrast, only 9.8% see a positive impact. This concern surpasses even the potential effects of abolishing even Section 21 evictions, demonstrating the magnitude of the pet policy issue within the rental sector. And interestingly, 56% of landlords perceive the impact of the right to request a pet as positive for tenants, whereas 16% view it as negative. And 16% believe it will make no difference whatsoever. Only 10% are unsure of the impact. Interestingly, tenants were less concerned about pet ownership. 68% said when they last moved, they did not ask to keep a pet as they didn't own one. 18% asked and were accepted. 9% had difficulty but did find somewhere to rent eventually. And only 2% said they had difficulty and therefore didn't get a pet. So interesting, isn't it? I didn't realise that we had 57% of households have a pet in the UK. That's quite astonishing. But interesting, we've never really discussed rentals and pets, really. So I thought I'd just throw that one out to you. As a landlord, how do you feel about the pets?
Well, I mean, good percentage of people don't really want pets in their houses. And often is the case that pets damage many parts of the house, especially if it's dogs, and especially if they're a type of breeder dog that the owners at the time are breeding it to be active in a certain way, doors, plinths, all sorts of areas are damaged by the dogs, and so most people don't really want dogs. And if I don't mind dogs personally, but if I was a landlord, I probably wouldn't want somebody to have a dog in there either, because it's not so much that that we don't like the pets, it's just what damage they cause. And the pet owners themselves obviously love their pets, and that's right to do that. And they will just sort of want to turn a blind eye to the damage. But the landlords, the people that own the property, find it difficult to allow that to happen, because 9 times out of 10, it becomes an issue when they vacate, or they want to upgrade or change. So tenants are, known to complain about the most, tiniest things under the sun. I've got a leaky tap, or the light doesn't switch, or whatever happens. But when it comes to pets, they turn a blind eye to all of the damage that a pet can do. So as a rule, they don't want that to happen. And under the law of change under the Renters Reform Bill, they will become apprehensive about allowing pets to be in the house. And as you rightly say, you don't realize what high percentage of people do own pets. But they are pets, and you are not able to get into the mind of what that pet is going to do. And if you've ever visited properties, as I have many, many years now, you find that a lot of the doors or the areas of that, and it's not just one door or one room, it's pretty much the whole house that gets damaged, because if a pet's going to do what it's going to do it to everywhere. And so that's where the problem, and the deposit that is normally held is not sufficient for the repairs that may be required if and when that owner and that pet leaves. And so it becomes a problem. So it's better not to have one. That's where the situation comes.
Interestingly, at the third reading of the bill, they've added in a mandate that tenants either maintain insurance to cover potential pet damage or compensate the landlord for the reasonable cost of obtaining such insurance. So it's going to be compulsory that they have to have some kind of insurance, whether the landlord provides it and they pay for it, or actually they have it for their own pet and themselves. So that's going to be interesting to see how that one pans out.
Well, I mean, insurance is a complete and utter waste of time, in all honesty. All it's going to do is a tick box exercise, when insurance companies, we all know, are ready and happily waiting for their premiums to be paid. But when you need to call them in to collect from them, it's going to be everyone else's fault but theirs. And no one's going to be able to ask the dog or the pet owner or the pet as to how that damage happened. And so it's a complete and total rubbish about insurance. I've not had one decent experience personally, and I've heard lots of people haven't had any good experience with trying to make a claim. But it's like anything, Paul. You have your car. If you miss a payment, hypothetically, the insurance company writes to you and say, "I'm going to cancel your policy." You can't afford to cancel the policy, so you have to make the payment. But you try and get money out of the insurance company and say, "I'm going to take you to the ombudsman," or something like that. It's not until you start to threat with the Financial Conduct Authority, etc., that they actually begin to start to shape themselves out. But if they can help not paying it, they will not pay it. So can you imagine if you had 57% of the pet owners all asking for insurance, and the landlord saying, "You've damaged so much to this, and I'm going to change it." I mean, it's just not enough. I mean, if I was doing that personally, I would be saying to a pet owner, "If you're going to put your dog in there, and or whatever the pet is, and I would want a substantial amount of deposit held, so that I knew that I actually real money, not waiting for an insurance company to cough up." Because insurance companies, arguably will argue until the matter comes to a roost, and probably not get the money. That's the problem. So it's good to ask for insurance. The question is, how do they wriggle out of giving you that money when the things aren't right? There's always going to be a reason, isn't there? So check, if you do take it, then make sure you check the policy's content, and it covers everything before you sign it and pay it.
Wise advice as always, Joe. Thank you. Final story this week. Estate agents overvaluing homes to gain instructions helps nobody. Sellers are being advised to be realistic with their asking price if they want to attract buyers amid a slowing housing market. The latest research from getagent.co.uk suggests that more needs to be done to stop the practice of overpricing homes to win instructions. According to the estate agent comparison site, just 36% of all homes that have seen a price reduction in the current market have been sold, listed as sold subject to contract. They analysed current market stock levels, looking at both the total proportion of homes for sale and have seen a price reduction in the current market, as well as the proportion of those price reduced homes that have actually attracted a buyer. The figures show that across England, an estimated 34% of total of the sale of stock, sorry, the figures show across England an estimated 34% of total for sale stock, excluding homes already marked as sold subject to contract, having seen an asking reduction in the price being listed for sale. So basically, I'm broadening this one out with you really. It's always difficult to know where to price it. And of course, it's been something that agents have done for years, isn't it, to try and win the business, appeal to their greed, their sense of greed.
It's an age-old problem, Paul. It was never going to go away. And yes, it is a sense of greed. Sellers obviously want to have the best possible price for their property, and agents want to win that instruction and will price it as high as possible within reason. If it was within reason, they might be realistic, but 9 times out of 10, they're not within reason. It's always about making sure that the competition doesn't win that instruction. And the other aspect of it is that they will reduce their fees almost to nothing if it means that they get an instruction. The twain shall meet. It was just never going to happen. I mean, 40 plus years, agents value over the top to win that business and not realistic. Even the sellers are not realistic. And then they wonder why it's not sold for 3 to 5 to 6 months. Because the agent has set the expectation level so high, it is hard for sellers to climb down from that high. And so the only people that are going to bring reality to that is going to be the surveyor. And the surveyor will be the umpire. I always call the surveyor the umpire in our game of cricket, in the game of property sales. The only real person that they're actually going to bring down the reality is going to be the surveyor. So if you, let's say a hypothetical, give an example that somebody's put their house on the market at £275,000, and let's say it's £50,000 over the top, because that's, you know, it should be maybe 225, but someone stuck it on the market 275, someone said you can have it for 275, and the next thing you know is that it's their market for 3 to 6 months. Somebody decides, okay, let's try and buy it at 265. Because you know, it's £10,000 out. After 6 months, people will say, okay, well, maybe I'll reduce it a bit. The value goes in for the purpose of lending money, and he does all his stats and statistics and comes and says, actually, it's only worth £225,000. That's when the reality really happens, because then the buyer is going to say, well, actually, I'm not going to pay 265. I want to pay what my surveyor is saying, 225. I can only borrow the money at 90 or 95% based on the valuation, which is 225, and that then tells the seller they've got to be realistic. The seller will probably say, no, I don't want to sell it, and subsequently hold on to the property, or becomes realistic. The person that sits back and watches that is probably going to be the agent. But what they don't bear in mind is that, you know, the longer it goes on, they're not going to get paid. So sometimes to turn around and put a price so astronomical on a property genuinely means that it's just not going to get paid for 6-8 months. In the meantime, which is where the agents do not realize the reality of it, is that they will spend lots of money advertising, marketing, taking phone calls, doing the viewings, going driving around there, getting the for sale boards, doing the detail, redoing the pictures, doing everything that physically possible they can do, only to find that they're actually no further forward because it's overpriced. It's just not going to go away. It is just the way the mindset is, especially in corporations. You'll probably find independent agents are far more realistic because they know the value of the pound in their pocket. But unfortunately, corporates will employ people who are based on targets. And if it means that they've got to go and get lots of instructions on, and even if they're at a higher price, that's what they will do because it's not actually money that hurts their pocket. But independent agents are the ones that I would think are more realistic because they know that if they don't sell this in a given time, then they're not going to get paid.
They say that while an asking price reduction may be a common tactic in increasing buyer interest, the figures show that it doesn't necessarily secure a sale. Of all of the homes listed for sale that have seen an asking price reduction across the market in England, just 36% had found a buyer and been marked as SSTC. It always has been clear, they say from data, that pricing a property inappropriately makes a successful sale far, far less likely. For a buyer, seeing a price come down makes the property seem less appealing and often leads to lower selling prices than if the property had been priced appropriately from the in the first place. For a seller, these unrealistic expectations often mean disappointment with a result that may still represent a job very well done by the estate agent. Unfortunately for agents and for the vendors, vendors mainly select agents based on the valuation provided or the fee charged, which often leads to overvaluing of properties and ends up helping nobody. Interesting comments.
It's a fact, though, which is what I've just said. They end up, reducing their fees and increasing the value simply to secure a instruction and then hope to see. I've often said to agents that, the 9 times out of 10 agents will sign up a contract for, say, 12 weeks for someone to, successfully sell and market. We know, I certainly know, that if something is priced right within the first 10 days, you should see activity and action should have happened. So if you put it into three sections of a time, a 4 week, a 4 week, and a 4 week, so to give you your sort of 12 week process, if you haven't got it right in the first 4 weeks, you need to consider bringing the price reduction in the next 4 weeks, because by the time you come to the third set of the 4 weeks, you just hope and pray the vendor doesn't call you and say, "Why haven't you sold my property?" Because you don't want to answer the phone call, and you're not going to get paid because it's not going to sell. So, there is a way to market that situation and go for that price reduction. The problem has always been the same. You want to win the business, you've got it. Now you can't sell it. You don't want to face the owner. So what happens is that owner will take that off your books and go to another agent, perhaps an independent agent. And that independent agent will say, "Well, look, it's too much money. It's too, you've got to bring it down X, Y, Z." And hey, presto, they'll probably sell it. So it's always back down to that magical word called communication. If we don't communicate the situation well, you're going to go back to zero, and nothing of nothing is nothing.
And that's where we have to leave it for this time. Thank you very much indeed for watching Property Matters. We'll be back with another show very soon.